Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.
In today's Football Weekly Extra, Premier League, business as usual at United as bottle of the Clarets leaves Sir Alex red-faced. Well, how about those Spurs with Jermaine Defoe in unstoppable form for everyone apart from the Metropolitan Police? We reel at the midweek results and wonder what's in store this weekend in the Prem. Elsewhere, Champions League. After Arsenal's visit, are Celtic in for the worst beating over two legs since Barry left Church School? We hear from Sid in Spain with what happened when Barcelona met Man City. We look at your post, get worked up over the new Serie A season and keep our hair on with Raphael Honigstein's bumper Bundesliga review. All of that in today's Football Weekly Extra. Welcome on board, everybody, then, on this, the first Football Weekly Extra of the new season. Barry Glendenning's here with me.
Hello.
I'm delighted to say. Hello, Barry.
How are you?
I'm fine. Good. Raphael Honigstein's in, too. Hi, Rafa. How's your book?
Hi, James. Thank you. It's good.
Yep. There's been some mixed reviews. That nasty man, Rod Little, in the Times.
I think it was an endorsement, really.
Was it? Okay. I've heard brilliant things about it.
And he called me Fritz. He called me Herman. Couldn't have made the point better myself that there's an unhealthy obsession with the ball.
Yeah, indeed so. Indeed so. Paul Doyle, hello.
Yep. Hi again, James.
Hi to you. Are you well? Nice summer? Good?
Yep.
Excellent. Well, listen, there's much to discuss.
And you?
Yes, very well, thank you. It's been very nice, actually.
Good.
And, now, top of the pile on our to-do list, the turnover at Turf Moor. Newly promoted Burnley's 1-0 win over champions Man United. Well done, Burnley. And it was no fluke, was it, Barry Glendinning?
No, it wasn't. They were worthy winners. First home game for 33 years.
And in the Premier League.
In the Premier League, sorry, yes. and what
it's
a home.
It's not like they were, you know, it was redeveloping Wembley or something. But
what a home they have. A rickety old stadium that was shaken by the end of the game. The dugouts, I would imagine one of the few Premier League games where they don't have those fancy bucket seats with, you know, under-arse heating in them in the dugouts. And Manchester United lost. Everyone, you know, last night it was their turn to be doomed. A couple of nights previously it was Liverpool, and before that it was Chelsea who were doomed. So, you know, it's paving the way for an interesting Premier League.
I think David Fischick and his minibus empire must have been very happy. This game. No? Blank? Okay, nobody saw. There was a big ad behind a goal for David Fischick's minibus sale. So it really...
Really, at Turf Moor, is it?
Sort of ad that you don't see any...
Were you there or something, Rafa?
No, it was
you
on...
You just saw that on the coverage.
It was huge. Never mind.
David Fischick.
Yeah.
All right, so if you're listening and you're in the market for a minibus, David Fischick's the man. Excellent.
I saw Burnley at Stoke on Saturday, I think it was, and... They looked very much like West Brom last season, where they had a lot of possession, but they were a bit frilly at the back and a bit blunt up front. And I thought that they would go the way of West Brom. But on last night's evidence, that may not be the case. In fact, those same failings could in fact be levelled at United instead. Michael Owen brought in to put away all those abundant chances that Wayne Rooney had a tendency to miss. Has continued his Newcastle form.
It's always the danger of catalogue shopping, isn't it? That the thing doesn't quite fit the way you thought it might. What of United? Mike65IE, the attractively monikered Mike65IE, posting and saying, if Manchester United are beaten by the least powerful of the promoted teams, having barely got the better of another promoted team on Sunday, does that mean Lord Wrigley's season is over?
Well, it doesn't, because in the last two seasons, United have picked up 5 points out of 12 in their opening four games and gone on to do okay. Sunderland, a couple of years ago, lost their first four games of the season and went on to be promoted as champions. I was looking at some Pathé news.
After they changed manager?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there's a slight distinction. On the subject of United, though, as has been pointed out, you know, they started really badly last year and then got into the swing and got to the final of the Champions League, won the championship, the Premier League title, but they had Ronaldo waiting in the wings to come in. This year, are they going to be able to go out and bring in a big name? Because it looks like they need one. Or are those happy spending days, the days of blowing 30 million on Berbatov over?
Well, it's certainly been frustrated in the transfer market. There's no secret about that. They inquired about Ribéry, then dropped out of the picture very quickly once Real Madrid came involved. The same happened with Benzema. And then afterwards, Fergie said, well, we don't need anyone, which wasn't entirely convincing. And I still think they need somebody. Having said that, the squad is good enough to be champions again. I think the one remarkable thing this season is that all the four, big four, as it were, are much closer together on a slightly lesser level. And I wouldn't be able to tell you, you know, if you give me a head-to-head between United and the other three, who'd come out on top. I think they're all exactly the same, more or less.
Would you not say Chelsea are exactly vastly more
superior? Chelsea? No, because Chelsea themselves haven't really been able to strengthen the side at all. I mean, Djurkov has been brought in, but he's a wide player playing in a narrow system. I don't know how strong he will be or how much of an impact he has. They've been frustrated themselves. I think the same is true to an extent of Liverpool, who haven't really strengthened, in my view, after losing Alonso. So you could make the argument that the only really side who, with some improvement, is actually Arsenal in a strange way. So I think they're all close together.
I was just going to ask you when Ashley Young had signed for Chelsea, but then I realised it was a pronunciation thing.
Djurkov?
Yeah, that's the one. Sorry, right, as I said. All quite evenly matched then, which sounds exciting. United have Wigan up next, who followed up their Villa win by losing to Wolves. Do you think United are going to get anything more from that game?
I mean, United didn't cruise to the title by any means last year. They beat a lot of teams 1-0, thanks to flashes of inspiration from someone who is no longer there. Or two people, I guess you could say, because Tevez is also gone, although he was obviously not as important as Ronaldo. And I don't see where their goals from midfield in particular are going to come from. Fletcher, Parks, Scholes, Giggs, they don't Carrick, they don't score often. And I think they're the most vulnerable to dropping out of the top four.
Do you think United are the most vulnerable?
Yeah.
To dropping out? I'm repeating exactly what you just said because I'm so stunned. Fresh words won't come, Paul. I'm extraordinary.
Well, I think they're the weakest of the top four. I think they were fortunate to an extent to win the title last year. And they've handicapped themselves with their failure to replace their most important players.
How much can we put? I don't want to be Sean Ingle on your ass, but how much do you want to put on that?
Well, I have a better bet to make later, which I have more confidence in.
Oh, okay, good.
You've already gone slightly Sean Ingle by making up a new word, extraordinated, which
that was
very
intentionally so.
All right, fair play.
So
it's like he thwacked the ball and extraordinated the assembled crowd.
Paul, it's very brave, and I think commendable that you take that.
I said they're the most vulnerable. I think they'll finish fourth, or if Spurs and Man City can get their act together, and that's an almighty if, obviously, and then fifth or sixth.
Okay, really, I hope for your sake you're not falling into that easy trap of
I said this
believing
before the
in
season.
early
no,
results.
I said this before the season. It's just that I was talking to myself at the time.
Right, okay. Burnley have Everton next. All three newly promoted sides won midweek, which might mean something or not. Probably not. Spurs, meanwhile.
It means, it's not those facts in itself that means, but Hull, obviously, and Portsmouth in particular, look doomed. Which brings me on to that bet I was telling you about.
Ah, right, okay, good. I
put it to you that Jermaine Defoe will score more goals this season than the entire Portsmouth team.
in
fact, he may already have done, actually, than they will get. Defoe, obviously, from last season. Crouch, who either scored or assisted with 44% of their goals last year, which was a bigger proportion than any player for any team. And Johnson may even score more than them this season. I just can't see when they're ever going to score a goal. The record for, at least in Premier League history, is failing to score for the first four games of the season. Now, Pompey have already failed to score in their opening two. Next up is Arsenal and Man City. So if they don't score against Bolton, I would say, in their fifth, I think they may set a new record.
Well, they're looking grim down south. And meanwhile, Spurs, brilliant start for them and by Jermaine Defoe. We're so used to them being rubbish at the start of the season that this seems like a real turnaround for them. But given the squad and given the amount of money that they've spent in the last 4 years, is this not what we should have been expecting all along?
It is. But yesterday against Hull, as well as scoring so many goals, they completely dominated and controlled the match away from home, which is not something that they've done for a very long time. So, I mean, they're very positive signs there, obviously.
Hmm. Good. Excellent. They're at West Ham on the weekend. That's a big test. Hull, meanwhile, will be hosting Bolton. How many defeats is it now for Hull?
Oh, I don't know exactly how many, but I think they've won one out of somewhere in the region of their last 30
since
games.
Since Christmas, probably. Is that right? That was the thing at the end of last season, wasn't it?
Didn't they beat Fulham last season with and were very lucky to as well?
Right.
So, but, you know, you have to
I
ride
think that
up.
Was their one victory since Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So not much chance of hearing Sloop John B come next May at the KC, which will be a shame. But then again, you never know because it is still very, very early. Now, meantime, Arsenal weren't in Premier League action midweek, but instead they had the Champions League qualifier, first leg, with Celtic becoming the first English team, or notionally English team, to win in Glasgow against Celtic since Brian Clough's days.
Right, I wasn't aware of that, but I'll take your word for it. They completely bossed Celtic around and Celtic were probably lucky to get away with a 2-0 defeat. Arsenal vastly superior. Celtic's big name players didn't play particularly well.
Some of them didn't play.
Some of them didn't play at all. And I wouldn't take any odds on Celtic overturning this result in the second leg. They're notoriously bad travellers in Europe, although they did get a good result in the previous qualifying round in Russia. But Celtic are in a very difficult position. They can't...
Scotland.
basically. They can't improve in the Champions League without money, and they're not going to get enough money to improve unless they play in the Champions League. So it's a real catch-22 situation for them. And Tony Mowbray talked a good game before the match, but, you know, they're just not on the same level as Arsenal. Nowhere near it.
Well, we'll be talking more about the big Premier League sides later on as we discuss Chelsea and Liverpool in part three. Both had big wins midweek. Coming up, though, very, very, very shortly, we start our European roundup with Raphael Honigstein on the Bundesliga.
Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson in association with SportingBet.com.
Raphael Honigstein, noted author and journalist. And all-round top Fritz and friend of the Football Weekly
and Herman
pod crew, and a Herman as well. Now, we laugh, but it's terrible. I can't believe that man wrote those things about you, Rafa. Does he know you?
No. Not yet.
Not yet.
Although a very famous and influential football writer offered his services in getting
him
killed.
Is it a large and famous?
No.
Okay.
Offered a service to get him killed, yes. Did you say?
He said he's got very good ties with the government and he can get them killed really? If he wanted to.
Eamon Dunphy famously went off on a big rant about Rod Liddle once. I can't remember what match he was acting as a pundit on, but somebody quoted a Rod Liddle article at him and he went off on some rant about, you know, why should anyone take Rod Liddle seriously, you know. He left his wife for a young one, which was the receptionist at the Spectator office, and blah blah blah, and they almost had to have a bucket of cold water thrown over him. He went into such a frenzy of vitriol over Lidl.
Oh really? Yeah, Rod Lidl hadn't really entered my consciousness until now. But anyway,
I do all my shopping at Lidl.
Yeah, there you go. Now we were here to talk about the Bundesliga, of course. Wolfsburg off to a flyer, despite they've had a departure or two, haven't they?
Felix Magath, the manager, departed.
That's right,
which was the big departure. But they've managed to keep everybody else and added Obafemi Martins. And to the surprise of many, including me, they've just not only continued where they left off, but even improved as a team. They've been absolutely irresistible in the first two matches. They look more variable in terms of their tactics. They were relying a lot of counter-attacking play now to keep the ball much better. It's just been phenomenal. And, you know, Arsene Wenger, before the start of the season, said this is no longer top four season in England. This is a top eight or nine season. I think he was being slightly optimistic, but that really is the situation in the Bundesliga. There are about nine teams who can all feasibly win it this year. And Wolfsburg is certainly one of them.
Oh, nice one. Hoffenheim aren't.
They are.
Oh, they are. I mean, even though they're down the bottom end of the table and stuff.
Well, after two games, they've drawn their first game against Bayern, where they really should have won it. They lost last week against Leverkusen, but they've got a big match coming up against Schalke. Schalke joined top under Magath, so again, Wolfsburg and Magath top. I think in Süddeutsche said, can Magath win it twice this year? You know, the championship. He's been so phenomenal with what he's done at Wolfsburg. And now at Schalke, who are really a very mediocre side in terms of individual class. But yet again, two wins on the trot. They're top. They're playing Hoffenheim on Friday night. It's a huge game and a very interesting one. But you've just got all these fascinating games because you've got that many good sides this year.
Brilliant. Bayern Munich, how's Van Gaal doing?
Van Gaal is struggling. They've drawn the first two matches against Hoffenheim and Bremen. There's a big debate about Ribéry's position. He wants to play on the left, as is his wont. Van Gaal has dreamt up this new role in a new formation, playing in a diamond system. When he came on against Bremen, he nominally stayed at the tip of the diamond for about 30 seconds, then moved to the left for the remainder of the game. Afterwards, Van Gaal said, well, he's got these freedoms to do whatever he wants, but I think he was putting a brave face on it, and this is really heading for a showdown down the line. And of course, it doesn't help that a place like Bayern, you have various grandees talking about these things. Franz Beckenbauer saying, of course, he has to play on the left. Uli Hoeneß saying, if he wants to be a Zidane, if he wants to be a Maradona or Messi, he has to play in the middle. So, huge debate. In the meantime, I think tactically they're much improved, but individually, for the first time, maybe in 20 years, they actually don't look the best squad. There are other teams like Hamburg, for example, who man-to-man to me look better, and that makes it for a very fascinating league, because whenever Bayern show a bit of weakness, it tends to open up the league, and that's exactly what's happening.
Paul Doyle, tell us quickly about France, or take as long as you like. Go on, knock yourself out.
League. I probably will knock you out. That's generally your reaction to when I start talking about France.
No.
Well, start with Lyon, who, of course, all but progressed to the group stages of the Champions League by crushing
5-1.
Anderlecht 5-1 last night in a terrific performance. Their best for a long time under Klopp. Well, they seem to have rediscovered their attacking verve. Perhaps not coincidentally, he returned to the 4-3-3 with which Lyon had a lot of their success at the start of this century.
It was against Anderlecht, I should say.
It was against Anderlecht, yeah.
But the thing is,
it could have been 10, you know, they could have had 10 goals. And this is with an entirely new strike force, obviously Benzema and many others have gone. And significantly a new playmaker, Juninho, who so long the linchpin of the team, has moved on. And the mantle has been taken up by Miralem Pjanic, who is a 19-year-old who was born in Luxembourg, but he plays for Bosnia, the country of his parents. And he was brilliant, even scoring a Juninho-esque free kick last night. So the signs they've started the league well, although they've only had one win and a draw. Marseille are also looking very strong this season in the league. They've reinforced heavily with a lot of Premier League cast-offs. Fernando Morientes is there now, Gabriel Heinze, Suleiman Diawara, who they bought from Bordeaux. He was literally central to Bordeaux's defensive prowess last season. Bordeaux, pretty much the same team as last year, assuming Chamakh stays.
That was one of the questions I was going to ask, actually. Is Chamakh going to stay? It looks like he will, no?
Well, it looks like he will, because no one will stump up the money that Bordeaux are demanding. And he's playing brilliantly. He's played brilliantly in the first two matches of the season, scored, I think, 3 goals in the first two games, and generally been excellent, as has Gourcuff again.
And they've held on to Johan Gourcuff well. Is that something of a different thing about Ligue 1 this summer, that apart from the departures at Lyon, by and large, the big clubs have held on to their big names?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the other big move, the only one Bordeaux failed to hold on to, was Suleiman Diawara, who defected to Marseille.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Paul. Lots of people posting in. So many, in fact. Great, great posts this week after our inaugural pod of Monday. Private Dick with an absolutely extraordinary reinterpretation of the old Lloyd Cole and the Commotions classic Rattlesnakes, which we might have time for a little excerpt of later on, Barry. I don't know how you fix
that.
What
have I told you, James, about presenters?
Frank Skinner.
Their egos run away with themselves and insisting on singing.
Come back, ego. Yes. No, it's just the guy put a lot of time into this. So, you know, just to give it a bit of an airing, you can sing it if
you could
like.
Have penned any old tat and you'd want to sing it at the end.
That's true, but he didn't know that.
You bought in a big sheaf of your own compositions.
I have. Where is it? Right. Now, that wasn't the only great post, though. Possibly the best of the week was Rolithroizen, or something like that. Rolithroizen, something. You'll know anyway. The pod should forget all about the football season this week and devote time to The Wire. If you need to relate it to football in some ridiculous way, suggest Rolithroizen. You could discuss the greatest corner taker of all time, Marlo Stanfield.
Hey.
Good stuff. Ah, religion. Big topic here in the pod. We like to air our theological theories. Tim in Toronto has given us his proverbial blessing. He is an avid pod listener and a Jesus freak himself, he says. Actually a pastor. He comes in on this topic of praying before games and the fact that Tim Howard was praying before Everton got almightily thrashed by Arsenal. He says, in simple terms, what seems like victory to this world is defeat in the kingdom of God. In the Bible, we're told that the first shall be last, that the poor will be lifted up and honoured, etc. So, in Jesus followers' terms, and specifically in relation to Tim Howard, getting thrashed 6-1 really is a victory in the kingdom of God. Excellent news for Everton.
Does that mean in the kingdom of God that... Yeah. Bottom four teams of the Premier League go on to qualify for the Champions League and the top four get relegated?
Well, no, because I think you'd have to follow the logic through and relegation, therefore, would be the prize, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You would take your place among the meek and the humble.
It is for believers. Yes. It is seeking divine assistance cheating.
Well, you know, this is the other the other point about all this, and Tim Toronto was weighing in on this issue too. A lot of times when people are either crossing themselves or lifting their hands to the heaven, waving at, you know, long-lost relatives, et cetera, they're not actually saying, dear God, let me beat those other people. I deserve it much, much more than them. They may be just thanking God for having kept them healthy, hale and hearty throughout the game. Or, in some cases, I think, for example, Kaká would probably suggest that this is what his finger pointing at the sky is about. They may be dedicating whatever they have done, not to their own personal cleverness, but to the fact that they are using the gifts that the deity has given them. Absinthe, on a religion-related note, mentions a story of a bloke whose life was saved in Iraq or Afghanistan, says Absinthe, due to the fact that he had a Pompey car sticker on his back window. And you know, the crescent moon apparently then won over the people who'd hauled him over for a roadblock.
They were too busy laughing to hold the gun steadily against his temple or something.
I see a pump, but they couldn't find the target.
Very possibly. And he also mentions that the Adidas goal line technology isn't continuing under the FIFA guys, but it's still being worked on, and apparently it's really impressive. That's great news. Villa Support Group is getting married on Friday, so congratulations to Villa Support Group.
Good luck to him.
Indeed.
Lucky lady.
Indeed. Barry, we may be seeing less of Villa Support Group in his new married guys and on the message boards, but, you know.
Didn't he retire altogether two seasons ago?
But luckily
that
he
went
came
well. I hope his marriage lasts longer than his retirement did.
Right, I hope so too, Barry. Right, what else we got? Jimbo, can you do a full preview of the Serie A action? Yours all right-thinking listeners. Tell you what.
You just made that up, didn't you?
How did you guess, Barry Glendinning? Yes, I can, but I think we've got to have a quick word with Sid Lowe before we do any of that kind of thing. Nice to hear from you again, Doctor.
Hello, how are you?
Very well. I have to tell you that plenty of listeners found it rather disconcerting having you in the pod on Monday, because you sounded very, very different.
Ah, the phone does funny to voice, does it?
It certainly does.
Maybe I should put on the voice from that bloke from the Tunes advert every time I'm in the studio. And go, a dirt bar to get to Dottingham, please.
Yeah, or not, is another option. Art Deco saying it was almost spooky hearing that familiar, brilliant word flow spoken by a crap connection-free voice, like seeing Brazil 1970 play in high-definition TV quality. Interesting analogy.
I think, Sid, you should put on the voice.
Very kind, yeah.
You should put on the voice from the guy who does Real Madrid TV, because he sounds altogether different as well.
Yeah, I should try that, yeah.
Is it the case that Sid has a telephone voice, like my mum, or, you know the way people answer the phone and put on a posh voice for some extraordinary reason?
Right. Well, they'll say things like, Whitehall 3727, how may I help you? Well, not that I've ever lived in Whitehall, obviously. Right. No, but.
And I think like Barry was looking for a posh voice as well. But phone manners, eh? Crazy.
Listen, you want to get on to Sean Ingle's dad on the phone is brilliant, by the way.
Really?
Well, because he always answers as if he can't believe, what is this contraption making a noise? So he always picks up the phone and goes, hello? Like, what is this thing here? Brilliant.
I've met Sean's dad. He's sort of your classic Irish emigrant.
He's the hardest man in the world.
Yeah.
I'm not joking. He's the hardest. You try and beat him in a arm wrestle, you haven't got hope in hell.
Did you try and beat Sean Ingalls' dad in an
arm wrestle? I tried repeatedly to beat Sean's dad in an arm wrestle and repeatedly failed.
Tell you what, listeners, this is pod gold.
Well, we're fops who sit around talking about football, whereas yes. Sean's dad spent the best part of his life carting bricks around building sites and whatnot, so he's well hard.
No, really? As indeed is his son.
Yeah, but his son sounds very camp on the phone.
Yeah.
Sean Ingall has the campest message minder message that I've ever heard.
Right. How does it go, Bert?
I'm not even going to try and do
it. Right, okay. Listen, if it's all the same to you, Sid, I might mention one or two things of Spain-related interest, yeah?
Yeah, football, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay, let's do that.
Zlatan Ibrahimovic made his debut last night, the big friendly with City. Tell us more.
Well, the news from that, obviously, not only is that Barcelona lost, but also that Barcelona played virtually all of their kids. Guardiola's been doing this a lot in pre-season, getting some of the younger players through, trying to give them minutes. And obviously, it didn't work last night. One or two people have got the knives out for them, but most people in Catalonia are saying, yeah, this is fine. Obviously, there was, you know, quite a lot of excitement about Ibrahimovic and what he would do. He didn't do a huge amount, but showed one or two little touches. But I think, really, no one is...
So
no
he
one
settled
is
in immediately, then?
Well, yes. No one exactly into his natural routine. No one is panicking in Catalonia in so much as they're saying that, you know, losing when you've got all your kids playing isn't a big deal. What they are a little bit concerned about, and Guardiola has let this kind of idea fester a little bit, is there is a feeling that there's still two or three signings short of the squad that Guardiola wanted, and it's just not happening at the moment. People are asking too much money for the players that Barcelona are after, so much so that Chiqui Baguirre-Stein, the sporting director, is now saying things like, well, it's all right, we could always sign people in the winter transfer window, and that rarely works, although, of course, anyone who remembers Edgar Davids would probably argue that point.
Mm. Is Vidic one of those signings that they're missing?
Well, this is interesting, isn't it? Because this sort of came out, not completely out of the blue, because, of course, Vidic complained, what was it, about 6 or 7 months ago about how it's always raining in Manchester and he would much rather go somewhere a little bit more exciting than that. And then recently has said that it would be a dream to play for Barcelona. And Barcelona do very, very definitely want a centre-back. However, of course, they're also realistic about this. They're also realistic about their financial state, and they know that they probably couldn't persuade Manchester United to part with him for the kind of money they can afford, not least because they've just been hit by a €60 million tax bill.
Mm. That's rough, isn't it?
It's pretty tough, yeah. I suspect, you know, no one I know's tax bill's ever that big.
Atletico Madrid had a big win in Greece, a 3-2 win over Olympiacos, which sets them up nicely in the qualifiers there of the Champions League. On an unrelated note, R. Jesus says, Sid, what is the story with Eva Banega? All the footage of him in his Boca days shows a player with the most exceptional close control. Was it Valencia and their various crises that stalled his career, or is he just not progressed? What are Everton getting if they're getting him? I have to say, Banega showed close control
that's exactly what I was going to say, James. I don't know if that was an intentionally brilliant post, but all the footage of Ever in his Boca days, all the footage of Ever not in his boxer shorts showing extremely close control on an internet web page, in front of a web camera, making a strange grunting sort of noise at the end of it. And obviously this does reveal that I'm sad enough to have seen this footage. Of course, anything in the course of duty, we occasionally have to do these nasty things.
As long as you weren't grunting while you watched it, Sid.
No, I wasn't. And I had my hands firmly, one hand on the keyboard, one hand firmly on the mouse. I'd like to make that very clear.
Right.
Is that what you call it?
Well, we've all got our own little pet names, haven't we? Anyway, the point
Mine
about Banega is
Mr. Floopy.
the point, Sid.
Which point are we talking about? The point about all of this was that the Banega. I personally think that Banega is a very talented footballer. He moves the ball very nicely. There's been one or two occasions when he's looked like a genuinely good player, both at Atletico and Valencia. But the key word there is one or two. I think he's not that good. I think he finds the Spanish game too quick and therefore would probably find the English game too quick as well. And I think he is a potentially very, very good player, but I think he's also potentially a car crash.
Sid, well, there you go. That's fantastic. We'll be getting a full preview on the Liga from you next week before the start of the season, I hope.
Yeah, I hope so. That'd be great.
Magnificent. Enjoy your newly wedded status in the meantime and our congratulations once again. And we'll catch up with you soon.
Fantastic. Cheers, then.
Bye-bye. part three. Now, I was about to do my big, and I do mean big, Serie A preview here. But I noticed that Joey Cunningham has posted in this brilliant team-by-team breakdown on the posting board for the last Football Weekly. So you could do worse than to go and have a look at that. I mean, I would just make one or two points about the upcoming Italian season, which looks like a doozy, as they say in Milan. There was a lot of talk earlier on in the summer that Serie A was going to be weaker this time around. No Kaká, no Ibra, who in typically fickle fashion, I'm already slagging off in the Spanish round, I hope you notice. But there have been plenty of big names in. Diego arriving at Juventus from Werder Bremen. Juve also picked up Felipe Melo out of Fiorentina. Huntelaar arriving at Milan, big, big signing for them. And at Inter, Samuel Eto'o, Lucio coming in. And we're reading today, Wesley Sneijder, which is a massive signing for them, or potentially so, if it goes through. The big question then, after 4 years of the Nerazzurri winning the title, is somebody else going to come in and have a pop? And the answer is, I still think Inter look like definitely the strongest team. I mean, Juve are finally at full strength. I think they've finally now bounced back from all the fallout of Calciopoli. They look really, really strong. But there are one or two questions at the back, particularly with the fullbacks. It may be that they'll make one or two signings before the end of August about that. But as things stand, although they have looked very impressive in the pre-season, they still don't look, I don't think, on Inter's level. Milan, meanwhile, who, like Juve, are going with a completely untested manager. Juve have Ciro Ferrara. Milan have Leonardo, had a fantastic pre-season, losing 8 games in a row. But I actually don't think they're that bad. And I think Huntelaar's a perfect fit for them up front. And with one or two other things that are going on there, Pato's been looking good. Ronaldinho's going to get a central role, which maybe will inspire him to really rediscover his joy of the game. Plus at the back, their woeful defence of last season has got Alessandro Nesta back fit, finally, and in quite an effective partnership with their new Brazilian Thiago Silva. That all looks good. And the fact that they seem to be buying Di Silvestri, the magnificently promising Lazio fullback, it all looks rather good.
And they'll have David Beckham in November, won't they?
No, they're still saying, obviously, it's a dream for us to have David back in January if they were. In the meantime, they've got, who's it, Abate, the young bloke who played out on the wing. And performed effectively in the Trofeo Berlusconi, the Berlusconi Trophy, on whenever that was, the weekend, I think. And
could Silvio not even arrange for them to win that?
He did win.
Oh.
Yeah, on penalties. Ah. Yeah. So that ended their run of 8 consecutive defeats. But despite all that, they started Siena, and a game that ESPN will be showing live in England on Saturday evening. I have a funny feeling they're going to come away with a defeat there, because they often screw up their opening game, and Siena are a well-organised team, and it's the kind of time of the season, you know, when the minnows spring a surprise. But anyway, so Milan not as bad, although I am tipping them for an upset loss at Siena on the weekend, as has been depicted. But I think that Inter, who have Mourinho as mad as ever, picking fights all over, are still a cut above. He's still got the love of his president, who's shelled out plenty of big bucks. They picked up 2 best players from Genoa, Diego Milito, Thiago Motta, Lucio at the back, Eto'o, and Sneijder, if he comes in, they've got to be favourites. Barry, have I got a second or two more to talk about favourites? Probably not.
Well, I actually wanted to ask you 2 things. Mourinho is now showing Sacchi the pimp hand, isn't he?
No, Lippi.
Oh, Lippi,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Well, Lippi was asked who he thought was going to win the title, and he said Juventus. And Mourinho took exception to this because he felt it wasn't the national team manager's place to show any kind of preference. And then Lippi replied and said, I'm sorry, he misunderstood, but I didn't mean anything. And Mourinho said, I haven't got time to reply to that. I, unlike some people, work every day. I don't hang around waiting for a game every month. He said it was a lack of respect from Lippi. But it's going to be a very tight battle for 4th place. You've got Napoli reinforced, Palermo, as I say. Sampdoria looking good. Fiorentina, who got there last year. Genoa, possibly. But I must say, I think Roma look a good shout to break back into the Champions League. They did lose Aquilani, but he was always out injured anyway. They've kept the other players they really wanted to hang on to, like De Rossi, Mexes, and Vucinic. And Roma, they have up and down form from one season to another. Last time around, they were disastrous, but still managed to finish sixth. This time, I think we'll be seeing a big reaction from them. And thus, back into the Champions League. But anyway, there you go. Brilliant preview, as I say, from Joey Cunningham on the post. So do check that out. Paul Doyle...
Mm-hmm.
Going into oxygen deficiency over there in the corner. Let's move back on to the Premier League. Chelsea. M. Meister asks, why so little Chelsea bashing on Monday's pod? Usually it's one of my favourite parts of the show. Benitez bashing comes second, Serie A bashing third. Oh, and M. Meister also asks, what happened to the prank calling? Something we'll have to dust off in future pods. So we had Chelsea bashing. What do the pod think, asks Jimmy 87, of Carlo Ancelotti's start? And how do they see him doing this season? Thoughts, dare I ask, on the midfield diamond? Worked at Sunderland, didn't it?
It did. I mean, Chelsea have been strange. They haven't played well in the first half of either of their opening games, and they were pretty good against Hull, turned it round, and then they absolutely tore Sunderland a new one in the second half of that game into Stadium Light. Sunderland were 1-0 up at halftime. I actually thought they might win, and how wrong I was. But, you know, there's no shame in losing to Chelsea. Do you think, Rafa, that the fact that Chelsea haven't played so well in the first half of both their games is that maybe the players are confused and then he sets them straight at half time and they go out and sweep all before them? Or
I don't think so. I think even against Hull, they created a lot of chances in the first half, didn't put them away, could have easily been 2-0, and of course then they conceded from the first Hull attack. So I think it was a bit of a, it wasn't really an adequate reflection of how the game had gone. I think in the second half he brought Balak on, they changed very little actually, but they eventually wore the opposition down. They still have this tremendous power. Where I think they will suffer a little bit is perhaps in Europe and later on in the season. We saw last season that Bosingwa, after a fantastic start, really faded away. And even Ashley Cole had a very, very good start under Scolari, and everybody's talking about the fantastic fullbacks, the Brazilian style of Chelsea. But the number of games caught up with them, because they are by far the busiest players on the pitch, cover the whole side each. Of course, they will have Shirkov, who's not really a natural left-back as such, more of wide left midfielder, I think, instinctively. So I think that would be my one question mark behind him as it gets to the business end of the season.
I was just going to ask when Barry Glendinning had signed for Chelsea, but then I realised it was an error of pronunciation. Liverpool, meantime.
Again.
Liverpool, meantime. But speaking of players who, you know, cover the whole wing and all that, how about that Glenn Johnson, eh? Four!
I think if Glenn Johnson, under the tutelage of Benitez, can learn how to defend, he would be a complete package and one of the best right-backs in the world, potentially. That's a big if. But I think going forward, he's certainly going to offer them something that they haven't had in the last few years. They've been very, very weak in the full-back positions relative to the other big teams, and I think in that respect they're much improved. But then I would argue they haven't really improved at all anywhere else. You could say that Aquilani, with his record, is certainly not an improvement on a fit and able Xabi Alonso. Mm. So
yeah, there's a danger of getting too excited about a victory over Stoke.
The other thing about is, of course, everyone knows how reliant they are on Torres for this season. He's had quite a hectic schedule in the last year, having won Euro 2008, then had a full season, interspersed with a couple of injuries with Liverpool, then gone to the Confederations Cup, and he's not looking fit, although he performed better last night. But I wonder if Spain face burnout ahead of the next World Cup to an extent, and a lot of people make them favourites, but some of them have to get a rest at some point.
Yeah, indeed so.
Liverpool have won one, got off to a ropey enough start and won their second game. I was looking at some old Pathé newsreels last night to see the last time Liverpool won the league, and they lost their opening four matches then as well against Newcastle Union, Thames Ironworks FC, Christchurch FC and Cray Wanderers FC, and went on to win the league. So, you know, it's just far too early in the league to read too much into these.
Smoking a pipe as they did so.
Probably. Yes, yeah. And running particularly fast with very, very long shorts. But, you know, it is too early to read too much into teams' early performances.
Right. So we'll just knock off and come back at Christmas.
Yeah, we should do that, really.
Very, very good. Sunderland have got Blackburn this weekend. Barry, in a word, win?
I'd go for a draw if I had to put money on it, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it'd be interesting to hear.
But Darren Bent to score. He looks like he's going to be a really, really good signing.
Excellent. Well, there you go. Very good. Don't forget to get your pick the score predictions in too. Quite literally, pick the score at The Guardian. And your post to us here at Football Weekly on The Guardian page. Click on the link. In the meantime, many, many thanks to Paul Doyle for joining us today.
Thanks, James.
Yeah, thank you. And Barry Glendening. Thanks, Baz.
You're very welcome.
And to you, Raphael Honigstein. And I look forward to reading your book, which is called
Englischer Fußball.
Are you going to sing us out, as promised?
Thank you so much for asking me, Barry. Once you guys have left the pod.
I think you should do it now.
Wait, you want me to do it now? This is to the tune of Rattlesnakes, just in case you don't get from my interpretation. He looks like Saviano on the Naples waterfront as he curses at Satanta for their financial mismanagement. That's my Lloyd Cole impression, everybody. Many thanks, Private Dick. We'll catch you again on Monday.
Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson in association with SportingBet.com.